Hey, welcome to Breitbart News Daily. Thanks for being here. So every Monday at 6 o'clock, we start off the week with a Gratitude Monday. We take the first segment and people call in and talk about something they're grateful for. And it's been awesome. So we're going to do that forever. So please, if you listen to SiriusXM or if you subscribe to SiriusXM, you can listen to that opening segment. And this is really important. It's the parent of all virtues, as Cicero said. Gratitude is so. It's really important. It's so important that I think we're going to bookend the show with it. So we're going to do 6 o'clock on Monday and then 8:30 on Friday. That's the plan. So it'd be great if you could listen to that. But if you do not subscribe, we just give you two segments here. We talked with General Michael Flynn at 7, and then we had a short segment after. This is what we'll play for you here. This was Joe Biden on The Howard Stern Show on SiriusXM. Now, I work for SiriusXM. This show is on SiriusXM. So I tread gingerly. I like my job. I'd like to keep it. But I didn't need to walk you through this. Okay. You are smart enough. You're aware enough to know what was happening here. You can do all the criticizing on your own. Here it is. Joe Biden was on the Howard Stern Show right here on SiriusXM. I've never been told by the bosses at SiriusXM what to say, what not to say. But I'm going to use good judgment here. And I'm going to control my tongue when it comes to by far the highest paid man on Sirius. Is that fair? And I assume there's money coming back and he's paying my salary. So you can come to your own conclusion. You don't need me to walk you through this one. This is the intro of Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, on the Howard Stern Show in SiriusXM World Headquarters in New York City. And try to imagine if you could ever, if you would have ever heard Howard Stern introduce anyone like this in 1994.
You know, the reason I'm so excited to talk to you was because I wanted to understand the tragedy in your life and how you dealt with it. And you're the kind of leader I love, because we're lucky to have you in the Oval Office and serving as the father of the country. Because if you're a good father.
Hold on. Father of the country? What is that? Who's ever said that? The father of the country is George Washington. I've never heard the president referred to as the father of the country. Have you ever heard that ever? I guess Milo used to call him Daddy Trump or whatever. I don't know if he still does. But that's, I've never heard you're the father of the country. Maybe I'm wrong on that one. Maybe that's an expression, but I've never heard that.
Serving as the father of the country, because if you're a good father to your family, which you are, I know you'd be a good father to the country, and I want to thank you for providing a
good. Are you a good father? Are you? I don't even know about that one. But okay, all right, let's go.
I know you'd be a good father to the country, and I want to thank you for providing a calming influence, an organized administration post-COVID, getting that vaccine out. I remember what the world was like at that point, getting NATO, getting us to feel comfortable, standing up to...
What does getting NATO mean? Getting NATO. What is getting NATO?
Getting NATO. Getting...
Go back to that. Getting NATO.
I remember what the world was like at that point, getting NATO, getting us to feel comfortable.
That was the thought. Getting NATO. Getting NATO, what, to pay up? Because that's what Trump did. What are you... Getting NATO.
I remember what the world was like at that point, getting NATO, getting us to feel comfortable, standing up to Putin, the incredible large growth in the jobs, unemployment rate down. I'll give you your greatest hits. The lowest uninsured rate in history, 4 out of 5 Americans are covered for less than $10 a month. Knocking off a few ISIS leaders, cutting the emissions in half. I mean, you've always been an environmentalist, you know.
What is that? Cutting the emissions in half. That is, That is. I don't know what. I don't know what that is. All right, listen. I'll save my Howard Stern comments. You got them. Let's talk about Biden in this because you got to see it. Let me retweet it out here. You can go to Slater Radio on Twitter. And you can see it. Because you got to watch it. You got to see it. It's important. So one of Howard Stern's tricks is his stage, his platform is elevated, like literally, physically, like he's sitting up high, like a pharmacist. he's like a step up, higher than everyone else, and he looks down physically, like his guests are down low. So he's towering over his guests. He's a giant person too, so he's big up here. And on his old set, his guests would sit on a really like absurdly comfortable couch, one where you like sink in, you like lose yourself in the couch, and your knees are up higher than your waist. You know, so the person would sink into the couch and would make them very vulnerable. So Howard Stern had this like power dynamic over the whoever his guest was, and it made them say things that they wouldn't otherwise say. Now his set's a little different. He's still up higher than everyone, but the person being interviewed, they're not on this big comfortable couch. They're sitting in the middle of an awkwardly large room with a awkwardly tiny chair, totally exposed. There's no table in front of them. And they just have a microphone on a stand to the side even. So there's nothing in front of you, which is a weird, vulnerable spot to be sitting
in. And I'm so excited to talk to you was because I wanted to
Sorry, I don't know why that played again. You're in this weird, I'm so excited. So it's like the guest is sitting in an awkward space. And very open, very vulnerable. And Howard is hidden behind a bunch of computer screens. There's computer screens all around him. Most of them with literally nothing on it. So this is a bunch of computer screens. He's like a priest in a confessional booth. He's kind of like hidden. You're totally open as the guest and he's hidden. So that's the energy of his set. And it's always been very intentional like that. But what it does, it's fine, I guess, when you're interviewing, I don't know who he interviews, Bon Jovi, I don't know, whatever. But when you have the president of the United States, excuse me, the father of the country, I've never heard that. When you have the father of the country sitting in that dynamic, it's very small. It makes Joe look very small. It's very unpresidential. It's just small. It's the reason I know this dynamic is true is I'm pretty sure it was Seinfeld. Seinfeld walked out on Stern's set once, onto the set, and said, I'm not sitting down. So it's like, take a seat, Jerry. And Jerry's like, no, I'm not sitting down. I know what you're doing here. I'm not sitting in that little that couch. You're way up there. I'm way down here. I know what's going on here. Right? So I don't think Trump would ever put himself in that situation. I know Trump's like, he's a TV guy, right? So Trump has definitely been to places and sets where he's like, this lighting's no good. The camera angle's no good. He wouldn't put himself in that situation looking so small as Biden does right now. And then you got to look at Biden's face. He's got this 10,000 foot stare that's so, I don't know, sad. I'll walk that sad back in just a second here.
Five Americans are covered for less than 10 Putin dollars. Incredible.
Hold on. Large total panic. Total panic here. Total. Everything's falling apart. All right. Let me play this sound right here. It just sounds like Howard's talking to like an ancient Hollywood actor or something. All right, listen to this.
I learned a lot, and I made a lot of friends.
Did you ever save anyone's life when you were a lifeguard? Was anyone ever drowning?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, well, half a dozen times. Usually younger kids, you know, but...
You do the thing with the whistle and then jump in the bathing suit? And
you got it.
No kidding.
Yeah, there's a big pool. We had there were seven lifeguard stands.
Wow.
I love that. Howard Stern, so fascinated by the size of the pool. How many lifeguards did? Seven, you say? Whoa.
You got it.
No kidding.
Yeah, there's a big pool. There were seven lifeguard stands.
Wow. See, that would define my... I would brag about that everywhere I went.
Well, by the way, I did it up in Lake Ontario, too, when I was in law school. But look, one of the things that...
You saved a dude's life when you were in law school? You were still doing the lifeguard thing?
Yeah, lifeguards, I mean, you know, people just need help sometimes. I mean, it's not like it's so heroic.
It's just weird that Joe's handlers thought that this would be
in that 10 good idea. And I looked at my mom, I said, honey, you haven't said anything. She said, Joey, let me remember, true story. She said, remember when they were desegregating Linfield, the neighborhood, into a, 70 homes built at one suburbia? And I told you, and there was a black family moving in, and there was people were down there protesting. I told you not to go down there, and you went down. Remember that? And you came, got arrested, be standing on the porch with a black family.
Right.
And they brought you back, the police. And I said, yeah, Mom, I remember that. Yeah,
so Joe was arrested when he was a kid for protesting desegregation. That never happened. And it turns out never did. He tells a story all the time. Even CNN says there's no evidence Biden got arrested during a civil rights protest. Biden has at least twice told the story of his supposed presence at this particular Delaware protest without mentioning any arrest. Now he's got arrested for it. In 2020, he also said he was arrested when he was a senator trying to visit the South African anti-apartheid icon Nelson Mandela while Mandela was imprisoned. He loves getting arrested, or he loves telling stories about being arrested. He's never been arrested, but he likes to tell stories. It increases his street cred, right? I got one more clip here, speaking of street cred.
For example, I remember starting off playing Catholic League football, CIO football.
By the way, I don't think a lot of people know that you were a star receiver in high school. You were the first string guy. You were the guy who caught the ball.
Runner-up at state, scoring, you know. What the
heck? Wow.
Okay. Oh, man. This is the I'm not joking. This is the posture that you take when you go to a nursing home. You're volunteering at a nursing home, or you're going to go visit a family member at a nursing home, and you're reminiscing about the old days. Wow, you were the wide receiver. You were the one who caught the ball. That's a real sentence from Howard. You were the one who caught the ball. Yeah, Howie.
Well, for example, I remember starting off playing Catholic League football, CIO football.
By the way, I don't think a lot of people know that you were a star receiver in high school.
A star receiver. Do people know this? Do people know that you were a star receiver in the powerhouse, the football powerhouse state of Delaware? In the Catholic school league?
Star receiver in high school. You were the first string guy. You were the guy who caught the ball.
You were the one who caught the ball. All right. Enough of that. Wow. No kidding. You were the one who caught the ball. Right, Grandpa? Jeez. So that's just perfect. Like, that's just how the media handles Joe, always have. And now it's so obvious. It's absurd. So he just can he hide in his basement again? He can't possibly, right? There's no pretext. There's no COVID. So they got to trot him out more than they did in 2020. But the only way they can do that is to make sure that every hit is like this. Every hit is like with the host saying, you're the father of our country and you're such a great father to your family that I know you'd be a great father to our country. And you caught the ball. Wow, you caught the ball. You were a star in high school. Gosh. But the problem, they trot him out to because they can only put him out and stuff like that. But that then just highlights even more how absurd this whole thing is. Like, what do you mean this guy's, like what do you mean this guy's running for president? And it's like, oh, no, he is the president. Like, what? How? So he was asked if he'd debate Trump, and Biden said, I am somewhere. I don't know when. But I'm happy to debate him. All right, here's what Trump said. Crooked Joe Biden just announced that he's willing to debate. Everyone knows he doesn't really mean it. But in case he does, I say anywhere, anytime, anyplace. An old expression used by fighters. I suggest Monday evening. Tuesday evening or Wednesday evening at my rally in Michigan, a state that he's in the process of destroying with his EV mandate. In the alternative, he's in New York City today, although probably doesn't know it. And so am I, stuck in one of the many court cases that he instigated as election interference against a political opponent, a continuing witch hunt. It's the only way he thinks he can win. In fact, let's do a debate at the courthouse tonight on national television. I'll wait around. So you got to watch it. Go to Slater Radio on Twitter, and you can watch his Biden's 10,000-foot stare, and you would have pity on him. So that's why I said it's sad. I said a minute ago it's sad. And it is. If you went to visit someone at a nursing home like that, like, listen, if you went, I don't mean to be rude because I've been in this scenario. You go and you visit grandpa at the nursing home or whatever, at his house or whatever, and you see him and spend time, and then you leave, and you talk to the person in the car that you were with, and you say, you would all say, wow, that was like really sad. Like, grandpa's not doing well. We've all been in that scenario. And you would have pity on Biden if he weren't the president of the United States. And then power hungry enough to want 4 more years. So it's not sad. It'd be sad if he was at the nursing home. But it's much worse than that now. It's much worse. And the more people can see Biden, the better. Hope he does Howard every day. Welcome back to Breitbart News Daily. Let's get the full story on what happened with the Arizona abortion law. And by the way, this is it. This is what the Democrats are making the entire election about. So even if you don't live in Arizona, we would like Donald Trump to win Arizona. And this could be the issue that makes that not happen. There it is. Abortion. The Democrats clearly are making abortion their top issue. And they want it to be on the ballot in every swing state as possible. They got it on Florida. And my understanding is they'll get it in Arizona here as well. We played some video last week of Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, bragging that a third of all Planned Parenthoods are in California. He thinks that's wonderful. And that the number of abortions after Roe v. Wade in California has increased by 17%. It's great. We're killing more babies than ever in California. And part of that is because they've made a purposeful push to encourage women from other states, from those red states, including Arizona, to come on over and get an abortion in California. We got you covered. Pretty insane. But I want to get a full understanding of what is happening in Arizona because this is a swing state, and if it's on the ballot here, then it's going to make a difference for the whole country. Arizona State Rep. Travis Grantham is here. He is the House Speaker Pro Tem and the Chairman of the Rules Committee. Travis, how are you doing, sir?
Good morning, Mike. Doing great.
Great to talk to you. Thanks for talking about this important issue. Take us back to this, the 1864 law. What does it say, and how did it come back into play exactly?
Okay, yeah, in real simple terms, when Arizona was a territory and transitioning into statehood, we just basically pulled a bunch of our old territorial rules off the rule book and made them law. The first legislature did that. One of the rules was no woman can get an abortion. It didn't read exactly like that, but basically you can't kill your child unless the life of the mother's at risk. That law became the norm here and was in our statutes for a very long time. It was actually recodified into law a few times, most recently in 1977 in Arizona, by a Democrat governor, Raul Castro, and a Democrat legislature at the time. Wow. And ironically, there's a member of the Senate now who was in that legislature. She's 81 years old. She's a Democrat. She voted for it.
Unbelievable. Oh, hold on. Okay. Stop right here. This is why I want to talk to you. This is great. So every time we hear Gavin Newsom, whoever, talk about this 1864 law, and I made the point before that, if anything, that proves, I'm assuming you're pro-life, that builds up the pro-life case even more. Like, yeah, look what these people even knew back in 1864 before sonograms. That's how obvious it all is. But they use that as like, oh, like that's how ancient and backwards we are. Okay, fine. But you're telling me, no, this isn't an 1864 law. This was recodified in 1977 by Democrats.
Right. And the Democrats are playing their ridiculous games just like they do. They always reference the Civil War and say things like that to make us sound like racists or like we want to be slave owners, when the Republican Party, as you know, was founded to abolish slavery. And yes, I'm pro-life. I'm proudly pro-life, and I'm a Catholic. I stand up for these values. I voted against this repeal numerous times, I personally think abortion is evil. And of course, there are difficult decisions people might have to make in their life. I don't even want to try to insert myself into that process as a politician. So I liked the old law. I thought the old law made sense. It accounted for the life of the mother. We could have made some minor tweaks language-wise, dealing possibly with rape and incest. That's what everybody likes to bring up these days as something that was missing. We weren't able to do that, and here we are.
Okay, but so the important part here, though, this isn't an 1864 law. It's a 1977 law that maybe was based off of a... Right, if you go back far enough, the roots of it maybe are 1864, but like whatever, like that's irrelevant. So it's a 1977 law. What is the 81-year-old Democrat who voted for that law in 1977, so against abortion, what does she say today?
Is actually quite comical. her response was, and by the way, she's a nice lady. I got, you know, nothing really bad to say about her, but this is kind of how the Democrat Party handles this. They say, well, you know, we were just recodifying a bunch of old territorial laws that were just a bunch of numbers and references. We didn't really even read them. We just voted to make them law because we figured it was all good stuff. Okay. I mean, that's how ridiculous their answer is and how weak their excuse is when it comes to this. They really don't have a good reason. The reality is the Democrat Party has changed. That's what's happened.
Yeah. So what was the question in front of the Arizona Supreme Court?
Well, the question in front of our Supreme Court here was because in the early 70s, there was a ruling, as we all know, called Roe v. Wade, that told the states, look, you can't have some of these restrictions in place. You can't do this. And we never repealed it off the books. It just kind of stayed there. And of course, we adhered to what the United States Supreme Court had said states can't do. And we left it there. A couple of years ago, the legislature here, which is Republican-controlled now, with a Republican governor, Governor Ducey, tightened it up a little bit. We said, okay, fine. There are some things we can do that have worked their way through the court system. We're going to create a 15-week abortion ban, and we're going to have exceptions in there for life of the mother, potentially rape or incest, and no abortions after 15 weeks. But we did put language in that bill that said if Roe v. Wade ever goes away, or if there's a ruling that gives this power back to the states, Arizona will revert to its original law. So that is what the Supreme Court here did. They reevaluated this situation because of a court case brought forward after Roe v. Wade, and they ruled just as we had legislated. They said, look, Republicans passed this bill. This is what they wanted. The old law stands. And, you know, now it's for the state to deal with. And that's how the system is supposed to work now. It worked.
Wow. Did they say the old law from 1977 stands, or did they say the old law from 1864 stands?
They just referenced it as the previous law. The reality of it is it was recodified in 1977. They didn't get too far into the semantics of it. That the media has done that job for us.
Sure.
We simply just look at it as what statute on the books last codified in 1977.
It's right. Just the law. That's amazing. Okay, so very good. So that's great. You and I think that's great. Gavin Newsom thinks it's horrible and evil and wicked, and how could you? Okay, so then I was very proud of Arizona because this went in front of the state assembly, which you are the speaker pro tem of. And what happened? What happened then to, and what was the bill that you guys were voting on, and what happened?
Well, what happened, and by the way, if Gavin Newsom's so smart and doing such a great job in California, I'd like to know why every single license plate in my neighborhood says California on it, moving into our state. You know, this presumption that California is so wonderful and this great bastion of hope because they've legalized abortion up until birth and sometimes after it is actually quite disgusting. And I think there's a reason people are fleeing California. But back to your question, what happened was a Democrat had introduced a bill, like Democrats do every year, to basically legalize abortion up until birth in this state. They also introduced a couple bills to repeal the old law because they thought they could see this coming. We did too. We could see it coming too, but of course Republicans didn't introduce those bills. So a Democrat member did introduce one. The Speaker did not give it a hearing. We did not move it through any of the processes. But once this court ruling occurred, that Democrat decided to team up with initially at least one Republican, which turned into three, and attempt to stand up motion in the chamber to change the rules for a day and allow this bill, her bill, to bypass all committees, not go through any of the normal processes, and come up for a vote immediately if that motion carried on the House floor. That motion failed the first time she tried it, which was just about 3 weeks ago now. I shot it down. I was up in at the dais running the chamber like I usually do, and she did not have enough Republicans to hang with her, and they tried again and again and again, and eventually we got rolled. That's, you know, the term we use, the dam broke, because there were three Republicans who felt it was necessary. Somehow they feel like they're saving babies' lives by doing this. I don't quite understand that logic. Maybe we can get to that in a minute. And they got the votes they needed by changing our rules, basically taking our majority away for about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Hold on. What do you mean? Like, what is that? How can you change the rules for a day or change the rules for an hour and a half? What is that?
Well, you know, we're a 60-person House of Representatives. We're a 30-person Senate in Arizona, bicameral legislature. It only takes 31 in the House to get something done, and it only takes 16 in the Senate to get something done. So if 31 want to join together today and throw the Speaker out, they can. If 31 want to get together today and change a rule they don't like about our speaking time limits, they can. 31 got together on this day, and
so 29 and Democrats and two Republicans.
29 and two, and then three ended up voting for the bill once it finally got there. Now, we fought valiantly, I thought, as much as we could. We substitute motioned them. We tried to go into what's called committee of the whole to put the bill up for debate. We have a representative, Representative Colladin from Scottsdale. He wanted to amend the bill at a minimum and put a right of action there that allowed the attorney general to be held liable if she chose not to enforce the law. There were all sorts of things we wanted to do, but we were unable. So once it finally got on the board, three Republicans voted for it with 29 Democrats, and it passed out of the chamber with 32 yes votes.
Amazing. And two things. Didn't it tie a time or two? Or was that something different?
Substitute motions tied a time or two. And when there's a tie in the chamber, the motion fails. Okay. So we had a couple of attempts where the main individual doing this, his name is Representative Matt Gress. He didn't have the Republican support he needed, and it failed because he only got to 30 votes. Okay. Now, they never got to an actual vote on the bill. That was just attempting to bring the bill forward.
Got it. Okay.
And that's where our victories were. We were able to hold off bringing the bill forward, but that's the dam that eventually broke, and we lost that battle.
So what do we do about these three Republicans?
Well, politics is, you know, I think, you know, I spoke to all of them. I told them I thought that they were all losing their races in this coming year. They're all running for re-election. They think that they're winning their races, and not only that, some of them think they're saving the Republican Party. So I personally think that their constituency will handle the issue. Mm-hmm. There's great candidates running in some of these districts that could easily replace these folks. You know, if their voters choose to send them back because of the choice they made, great. I just don't see it happening. What I've witnessed in my 8 years here is the Democrats will never support you, so you can't make friends with them. And when you do something like this on an issue this big, you alienate half your base. So then you create a block there that will never support you. So I think the best thing we can do for them is find out who's conservative and truly pro-life, who might be running against and support those individuals. It's a tough decision. It's not in my district. I'm in a very conservative district. So I can vote like this all day, and I will vote like this all day, and I gain votes. Those individuals are dealing with a different dynamic.
Well, we talked to the U in Nebraska the other day, and he said the same thing. He's like, yeah, well, a bunch of these Republicans are in Omaha. Like, well, who cares? Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh, well, they got to vote like Democrats a bunch of times. Like, what are you talking about? So where are these three? Because you're in Phoenix.
Right. I'm in a suburb, Gilbert, Arizona. Very conservative.
Where are these other cats? Where's the blue part of Arizona that you got to be careful about?
Paradise Valley in the center of town has a lot of this that kind of touches Phoenix and much more urban. That's one of them. One of them's a North Phoenix rep. That's a little bit more, you know, city-like, if you will. Mm-hmm. The other one, surprisingly, Tim Dunn, is a farmer from Yuma, Arizona, which is rural. And you know, he was the last one I would have expected to join in on this. I think, really thought and thinks to himself that by getting this off the radar, getting it off the news, getting it off the books, we're getting the battle won, because then we can focus on things that actually matter more.
Yeah, what do you say to that argument?
I just disagree with that logic. I really do. I looked at him and was just like, I don't get it. You know, Tim's my friend, but I was dumbfounded by that. So, you know, they made the choice they make. They're going to live with the consequence now.
So what's it like when you meet with these guys? So you have, so you're the Speaker pro tem. So you're like they're the number two guy in the House, second highest ranking Republican. So they come to your office, I'm assuming. They come to your office. You're behind the big desk. They come into your office, sit in the little chair. And what are you just like, hey, man, what are we doing? What the heck? How do you start this conversation?
I like to stand up like House of Cards and, you know,
that's right,
bang my fist on the desk, you know. But, exactly. No. A lot of times, you know, we meet in as casual a setting as we can, but it's private. And I'm a very direct person in this role. I have to be, because to run this chamber, you really got to be respectful of both sides and deal with idiocy on both sides equally, quite honestly, which I try to do. So I just look them in the face and say, like, is this really what we're going to do? I mean, is there anything we can do to not do this, or tell me why you think we need to do this? And, you know, sometimes, we're able to talk through the issue and make a better decision. This one, these people were committed. I mean, they were past takeoff speed. Like they had made their mind up a long time ago. So, wow.
And how about this? And not a single Democrat, like Republicans can get a single Democrat to come over to the pro-life side.
We have one pro-life-ish Democrat. Her name is Lydia Hernandez in the Arizona House. Very nice lady, Hispanic lady. She has voted with the Republicans on some things that have riled her caucus. This is their issue, though. I mean, you know, what you got to think about, they're losing, and they know it. And the Democrats don't have anything to run on right now. They can't run on the economy. They can't run on the border. They can't run on national security. What are they going to run on? They're running on abortion. Mm-hmm. That's it. And quite honestly, if people, the electorate, is I'm just going to say the word. If we're dumb enough to vote on that one issue, if we're going to let emotions get the best of us and vote for a party like that on this one issue, the voters are going to get what they deserve, and America is going to continue to deteriorate beyond what it is now, and it's going to be sad. But that's their issue. That's what they're running on. They've grabbed onto it. They're not going to let go.
Wow. Okay, let's run out one final thing. We got about 3 minutes, but final point on this. Is this going to be on the ballot in November?
It is. There is a initiative. You know, Arizona has a voter initiative law that has been getting signatures. That is basically what happened in Ohio. I think it went up in Michigan. It's the same group, same law. Basically says unrestricted abortion until birth. They're trying to put that into our Constitution. So that is going to be on our ballot. Of course, people like me are opposed to that. But the scary thing is, there's nothing else going on the ballot. Now, in order to pass, it needs to get a large threshold of the vote. We need to add another option. in my opinion. So what the legislature can do and what we're working on now is potentially putting a few more questions on the ballot for the voters to choose from on this issue. One may very well be reverting back to our original law. One may be something like we passed 2 years ago, which isn't going to be easy to put up there, but it might be better than the alternative. And you know, the alternative is for us to do nothing and work like crazy against what they have put on the ballot. The problem with that is this is so fresh in everyone's minds. There's just a lot of us that are concerned the voters will vote for it if it's the only option on the ballot, and it will become part of our Constitution, and that makes it very hard to change in the future.
Oh, wow. You're right. Oh, the stakes are high, so it can't just take a 31 majority in the next section, the assembly, to change it if it goes in the Constitution.
Right.
Oh,
it takes a supermajority to change it.
Wow.
If the voters enact it.
Oh, man. This is huge. That's huge, Travis. Like, this is big. This is a big one.
It's the fight.
Wow. All right. I got 1 minute. How's it looking for Donald Trump and election integrity in Arizona?
So I think Donald Trump will win Arizona. I mean, he only lost by 10,000 votes last cycle. You know, COVID did a tremendous amount of damage to our country, our economy, our political structure, people's mental states. I really don't see him losing the state this time. Arizona, I believe, I mean, I've been in the majority here for 8 years. It may be turning a little, but it feels like a red state when you're amongst the people. We've actually passed a good election integrity reform law already, and we forced this Democrat governor to sign it into law, believe it or not. So I think it will be better. We could spend hours talking about our election laws in this state, what we could do better, what we do better, what's true and what's not true. But I'm feeling pretty good. I can tell you that people on the ground here are sick of the Democrats and sick of Joe Biden.
Agreed. Same over here. Same on this ground over here. Well, let's chat more about that election integrity stuff and all the other stuff going on in Arizona another time. Travis Grantham, he's the House Speaker pro tem. Travis, we're praying for you, man. This is the fight, and we're grateful you're there. Keep it up.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, sir. Trump won 2016 over Hillary in Arizona by just under 100,000 votes. Hey, thanks for listening to Breitbart News Daily. Check out Slater Radio on the Twitter and the Instagram. We put a couple videos from the show today, including one from the Gaza encampment in Stanford, where the vibes are amazing. So you can check out the vibes at Stanford. And then also, you have to watch the video of Joe Biden on Howard Stern. The video makes it all the more pitiful. Slater Radio on Twitter and Instagram. We'll see you tomorrow.